Hello, this is Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair of the ISSB, and I'm here today with our Chair, Emmanuel Faubert. And we're recording this podcast after our board meeting here in Beijing and on the eve of our Beijing Sustainability Conference. Emmanuel, do you want to bring listeners up to speed on what you've been up to this month? I think you've just come back from the IMF and World Bank spring meetings.
Sure. Thank you, Sue. Welcome everyone to our podcast. And yes, last week was the important annual spring meetings of both the IMF and the World Bank. And for us, it's an important moment because multilateral development banks are playing an important role in building capacity to support implementation of the ISSB standards. So they are interested, and our meetings reconfirm that in the role that the ISSB standards can play in unlocking capital, especially in growth and emerging economies. And therefore, they're using the tools that the IFRS Foundation has developed to support jurisdictions with their regulatory adoption and implementation. And so, for example, this year, the IFC has led technical assistance programs in jurisdictions such as Peru, Jordan, Bangladesh, Mongolia, amongst others. And the World Bank has led 5 workshops in collaboration with IUSCO in different regions, latest taking place in Nigeria earlier this month. So the spring meetings provided a great opportunity to meet key implementation partners for us and share feedback and learnings from recent initiatives. So that was me. And what has been happening on your side too?
Well, I was in London while you were in Washington. So I was in London for the meeting of our advisory council, which is a fantastic group of stakeholders with lots of different perspectives from all around the world. Are giving us their input and advice on our work from a strategic perspective. Ably led by our chair, Maren Kelsall, who does a great job of coordinating a really big group of people, around 50 people. And we had a particularly useful session this time, I think, from the ISSB's perspective, discussing our thoughts on passporting and getting advice from the council in terms of the concepts and just their thoughts in terms of how we communicate on this front. So that was a great discussion. And for me, the key takeaway was there was a lot of support for the idea, but it showed us where we had some improvements that we could make in the way that we communicate and explain the importance of passporting. So it was really useful for us from that perspective, in particular to make it really clear from an investor perspective. And the passporting idea that we're talking about is where a jurisdiction would make the decision to allow a foreign issuer or the local subsidiary of a foreign entity already reporting using ISSB standards to use the ISSB standards as issued by the ISSB to meet the local reporting requirements in a jurisdiction, rather than needing to prepare a separate set of disclosures that could be very similar to or a bit different to the ISSB standards. And that's really, really important for a couple of reasons. Firstly, from a company's perspective, just having that identical language to use around the world just brings incredible efficiency. Even micro differences can really result in complexity for reporting entities. And the second really important factor is that the pure application of the ISSB standards just improves comparability and completeness for investors. So there's a powerful case on both the corporate and the investor side. And of course, we also get lots of those benefits when jurisdictions just directly adopt the ISSB standards as written by the ISSB, which is a great direct route to these benefits. But in the absence of that, then this passporting is a really great tool to just further improve efficiency across borders in the sustainability reporting environment. So that's more to come on that front, including with our jurisdictional adopters working group. But thank you to any advisory council members who are listening, because your input was really helpful for us to advance our thinking there. The other thing I did conveniently on my way here to Beijing was to pop into Hong Kong, where I had a good meeting, firstly with the insurance industry, which are, for me, a really important group of stakeholders to talk to about our work, both because they're huge investors in financial instruments. So as investors, they really benefit from the information flowing from the use of the ISSB standards, but also as a reporting entity to report on their performance as investors and how they're managing risks and seizing opportunities and their underwriting perspective. our standards could be really, really helpful for them on their reporting. And of course, we all read lots of headlines about the insurance industry and climate risk in particular, and how it can affect insurability. And insurance is certainly a really critical part of the financial system. We rely on it hugely. It underpins all lending. You know, mortgages are reliant on it. So much investment in economic activity relies on insurance being available, and also health and life insurance availability is really affected by the health of the insurance industry. And we know that, you know, all the way from Australia to California, insurability of houses due to climate risk related factors is a growing area of focus. So given that backdrop, it's really important for those investing in the insurance industry, but also for others, prudential regulators and others, to really see insurers providing high quality information about how they are thinking about sustainability related risks and opportunities, including climate related risks and opportunities, and communicating on that to the market. So it was a really, I think, a great conversation that we had. We heard from some insurers as well about how the information that they are gathering here for reporting purposes is also really information they want to be thinking about to build into their decision-making from a business perspective. So it's business relevant as well as investor relevant. And we also talked quite a lot about how insurance companies are pretty well positioned, relatively speaking, because they are used to thinking about different scenarios. They're used to being subject to a lot of regulations, so the quality of their reporting tends to be high. They've got good controls and processes. And so this is very much about bringing the sustainability reporting into that realm of rigor that they're already used to, expanding the scope of that, having golden sources of data that are used for sustainability reporting as well as risk management and prudential reporting for their decision making. And also they talked quite a bit about the work they're doing internally to bring their sustainability reporting teams closer to their financial reporting teams, which was all great stuff to hear. So I really enjoyed that engagement. I also had the opportunity to touch base with the cross-agency steering group in Hong Kong, which developed the roadmap, and to hear about their progress on looking into assurance reporting, which was really great to see. So that was the lead up to Beijing, which brings us to this week and to our board meeting. And our main topic of discussion at the board meeting this week was our project on nature-related disclosures. So perhaps, Emmanuel, you could start us off with the discussion we had about some of the sort of content and disclosure areas of what we're working on there.
Sure. Thank you, Sue. Yeah, indeed, on nature, we discussed both content and form. Let's start with the content here, where we focused, I think, on two areas. First, what information investors need to know about the location of a company's assets and activities. And we have had in previous conversations and papers lots of thoughts about the GPS related aspects of nature-related risks and opportunities. And so that was one thing. And the second was the information investors need about a company's interactions with indigenous peoples, local communities, and affected stakeholders in the context of nature. So we discussed how to support reporting on these two topics by providing guidance, drawing on existing materials to do so, and especially from the TNFD framework. In our work to enhance the SASB standards, we will also consider what industry-based information investors need on that particular topic. We're also going to propose disclosure requirements on the amount and percentage of assets or business activities vulnerable to nature-related risks or aligned with nature-related opportunities. And finally, we want to make sure our proposals, as usual, I'd say, are workable in practice. So we agreed to propose we use a proportionality mechanism in relation to this requirement so that a company would use reasonable and supportable information available at the reporting date without undue cost or efforts, which obviously aligns with the fundamentals of IFRS S1. So I think in a nutshell, that was the decision we made on content, which is a good progress towards the next step. And we also had a discussion about the form of standard setting, and maybe that's for you, Sue.
Yes, so a long and detailed conversation about the form of standard setting that we would use on our nature-related materials. And when we got to the board table with the paper, we really benefited from doing that in the context of having had input from stakeholders already through our stakeholder engagement that was informing how we would approach the issue. And in particular, the paper and the discussion was informed by a conversation we had last month with our Sustainability Standards Advisory Forum, which is a global group of standard setters from around the world who shared their advice and inputs from a standard setting perspective on how we might think about this issue. And it very much informed this paper. I said in the board meeting that my whole thinking changed as a result of that SAF meeting, which is really shows how important it is. And really, due to the extent of implementation efforts that's already required to implement what we've already published in IFRS 1 and IFRS S2, we were really conscious of the market capacity, really, for digesting a new standard on reporting on nature-related disclosures and what would be required of companies who are seeking to assert compliance with the ISSB standards. So we decided, given our desire to move forward improving nature-related disclosures, but to really be careful about the environment and the amount of implementation ongoing around the world, to include the materials in an IFRS practice statement. And so that was the decision that we made today. And one of the things we reflected on quite a lot in the conversation was that while we were talking about a practice statement, it's something that's not really that familiar to many in the market, particularly on the ISSB side. Our IFRS accounting stakeholders have got more familiarity. And the first important thing to note is that a practice statement is a form of standard setting within the IFRS Foundation. So late last year, we decided to do standard setting on nature-related disclosures, and we said we'd come back to the form. So this was what we'd always agreed to do. And so by issuing an IFRS practice statement, this is a standalone, prominent part of IFRS Foundation materials. And really importantly, it's subject to full due process. So there's exactly the same opportunity to provide input on what we propose as if we were writing an IFRS sustainability disclosure standard. But importantly, a practice statement is non-mandatory. So it means that an entity doesn't need to apply the practice statement in order to be able to assert compliance with the ISSB standards, but it's available for a company to apply if it decides to report on nature-related risks and opportunities, and it's also available for a jurisdiction to mandate if a jurisdiction wants to require this form of nature-related disclosures. And really importantly, if an entity applies a practice statement, then it has the full effect of a standard. And one of our board members, Richard Barker, perhaps gave the best articulation of this about the relationship between the practice statement and IFRS S1. So IFRS S1 already requires companies to provide information on all of their sustainability-related risks and opportunities that could reasonably be expected to affect their prospects. And today, if a company picks up IFRS S1 and identifies climate as a set of risks and opportunities they need to provide information on, they then pick up S2 and apply that to provide the information. Now, if an entity would be applying IFRS S1 and they identified that nature-related risks and opportunities were reasonably expected to affect their prospects, they could pick up the practice statement and apply that in order to provide material information to investors using the ISSB standards. So it has exactly that same relationship and effect when a company uses the practice statement. So it was a big decision for the board to take this form, and we had an extensive discussion about the balance between minimising the risk of disruption to the substantial implementation efforts and adoption efforts underway around the world while still moving forward, advancing nature-related disclosures. And one of the points that the board made was we thought that using a practice statement, we could help reduce the risk of siloed reporting, with nature not being reported in a way ignores interactions with other risks and opportunities, notably climate. And we think that a practice statement allows us to signal this. And we also thought it would be a way to really make it clear that this was supporting the application of IFRS S1. And also another thing we noted, as we've discussed in many past episodes of the podcast, is that many of the investor information needs that we have identified on nature are industry-based. So it will also be the case that our work to continue to enhance the FASB standards will be important to provide particular examples of disclosures and metrics that would be relevant for those reporting on nature. And so companies applying IFRS S1 would still be referring to and considering the SASB standards in this context. Now, another important thing we discussed in the conversation was that this is a decision for today, a proposal for today based on the state of the world today. And that doesn't mean that that's the end of the, you know, end of the game for the ISSB on nature-related content. This would be subject to public consultation, and we will ask a particular question in the consultation on whether our stakeholders agree with using a practice statement to capture the content on nature-related materials. And also, in the future, we can look at the application that we've seen in the market, we can look at the interest of investors in information on nature and make a future determination on whether we will move to a standard in the future and consult on that at that time. So this is a step on the path towards the advancement of nature-related disclosures. One thing we talked about a lot in the meeting was that the proposal of the staff to recommend a practice statement as the form of standard setting had attracted quite a lot of comment in the market. People were a bit surprised by it. And also it was pretty apparent that we think we're speaking a language that people recognise when we talk about a practice statement, but it's not a commonly known form. And so we'll need to make sure that we're really clear what a practice statement is, what it isn't, and also that there's work to do to encourage its adoption and use in the market as well. So that was another important piece of the conversation. But Emmanuel, I think it's an important enough topic that maybe it's good to pause and see if you've got anything you want to add from your perspective in terms of that discussion.
Well, thank you, Sue, for providing me the opportunity. And certainly what I can say is that, you know, having been in the food and agriculture space for 23 years, I know how much that industry depends on a lot of ecosystemic services from nature, water availability and many other things. So I do believe indeed that there are important elements that it makes sense for companies to report to investors because they can be really affecting the prospects of the company in terms of risks or opportunities around nature topics. Having said that, I would like to, first and foremost acknowledge, as you just said, that having published our board papers about 10 days ago, late last week and just before the board meeting, we received a number of letters, some public, from stakeholders in the nature conservation space that expressed their concern that moving from a potential standard to a practice statement meant essentially that reporting on nature could be optional. And that word is a big word. And the first thing I'd say is that we will organize a proper follow-up to discuss their possible remaining concerns after the clarification of both the intent, but also the form and the description that you have appropriately made. So thank you for that, of our discussion on the board about what a practice statement is and what it is not. But the substance of what I would like to share here, in addition to what you just mentioned, Sue, is that when we decided back in October to move to a standard setting phase from research, drawing from the TNFD framework, we made an explicit comment that the form of standard that we would be looking at would not be a mandatory standard immediately, in the sense that we were looking at the standards that would have an effective date that would be determined at a later point in time, so that in effect it would be voluntary for some time. And the reason for that is because, as the Sustainability Standards Advisory Forum informed us strongly, as you just mentioned, we had heard already from the 40 jurisdictions that have started to introduce or started pathways to introduce the IFRS sustainability standards in their legal framework. It was absolutely impossible. And once, you know, for instance, 17 of those jurisdictions are going live this year, that we would just come next year and say, unless you immediately insert a mandatory application of our new standards, you won't be complying with the ISSB standards anymore, as they are just starting the journey. So it's very clear that the market needs to ensure that there is a proper implementation of IFRS S1 and S2 in all of these 40 jurisdictions for a couple of years before we can think about mandating an additional standards to S1 and S2. But what I would say in my conclusions on our conversation today on the forum is that I think there is a continued perception for some that IFRS S1 does not cover nature. Well, it does. We do completely say that all sustainability risks and opportunities, all of them need to be reported when they can affect, you can reasonably expect that these risks should affect the prospects of the company. So nature is already a fundamental part. It's an obligation that nature-related risks and opportunities are reported under S1. The same goes into S2, where climate is not only about greenhouse gas emissions, it's all about climate. And we also know that there is a clear nexus and connection between the human capital, social, and natural topics with the climate topics in many ways. So the intent that we have today is to ensure that we add incremental additional disclosures that are going to perfect the way that with S1 and S2, the regulators around the world and the market participants can actually apply even better what we have. And the last things I would say is, as just repeating what you said, Sue, I think there are very important principle for stakeholders to keep in mind here. One, the consultation will ask the question whether, you know, just to confirm that practice statement is the favored option. So stakeholders that may have a different view can express their view during the consultation, and we will re-deliberate after that consultation, obviously, before finalizing the practice statement or any other form of standard. The second is that it's very clear that any country that want to make this practice statement part of their mandatory regulated standard can do that. And we know that some may actually seek to very soon incorporate that into their work. So that will be available for that to happen. And by the way, also avoid that there is a fragmentation, because if we don't do that now, you know, jurisdictions may have no other choice than developing their own to serve their sovereign needs with a refragmentation that the ISSB was created to start with to avoid. So I think this is an important aspect, that this practice statement can be made mandatory from the day of its issuance by ISSB. And the last thing is, as you said, it is a pathway towards something else. And we, in a way, would be only one consultation away from being able to create a proper standard, whatever its shape or form will be in the future, from that practice statement. So, sorry, I've been a bit long, but I think it was very important indeed that we have our voices clear about what we're trying to achieve here.
Thanks for that. And Anil, I think it's worth us both expressing our views, because we've all got slightly different articulations on this, and it's a really important topic. So if you listen to me and Emmanuel, and it sounds exciting to have a say on the form of the document that we put out for comment on the proposal of the practice statement and its content, we're still working towards October as when we publish a document for consultation. And Emmanuel, I predict lots of comment letters. That's my forecast. In terms of this consultation,
we bet on the number.
Yeah, later. We'll keep truing up as we work towards October. Now, the amount of time that Emmanuel and I have taken to talk about our nature discussions gives you an idea of why, when we got to our final session of the board today, it was a very short session because we'd nearly run out of time for the poor staff to discuss a really important issue, which was an update on the work of our transition implementation group, where we were updated on the discussion last month on the question of disclosures about biogenic emissions, applying IFRS S2, a really important topic, a really important update that got not too much airtime, unfortunately, just because we spent so long on nature. But I really do encourage you to go and have a look at that paper if you're in the process of implementing IFRS S2, because it's an important one. Now, what I'm going to talk about a little bit next, and talking about implementation is a good segue to that, is the fact that my next step of my journey is to go to Australia next week, which will be really interesting because the climate reporting in Australia is very much live there now, and we start to see the early application, which is really, really interesting. So I'm looking forward to talking to people in Australia about that. One of the things I'll be interested to discuss with people more is the question of disclosures about anticipated financial effects of, in this instance, climate-related risks and opportunities, which is something people are very, very interested in, as listeners would know. And in Australia, we are starting to see practice emerge there. And it's interesting to see that there are cases where companies are providing quantitative information in Australia. So, for example, we see information about planned capital expenditure. We see people talking about the potential impact in the future, taking into consideration the effects of past floods and using that as a basis for getting an idea of the sense of potential scale in the future. And also people looking at things like industry forecasts of the price of carbon credits when they think about their planning for their emissions targets. So it's really good to see some really practical approaches, I think, there in Australia, and I look forward to discussing that more. In other cases, we see companies making use of the possibility to provide qualitative information on anticipated financial effects. It's good also to see practice emerging there with the disclosures that come with it and the approaches developing. So overall, I think I'm really looking forward to those discussions and to digging into that in a bit more detail. But before that, Emmanuel, we have more to do in Beijing, including a conference tomorrow. So maybe you could chat about what we're doing here in China for the rest of the week.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Of course, you. Well, we are certainly meeting a number of important stakeholders for us here in China in preparation for the gradual implementation of the Chinese Unified Sustainability Standards that are converging with ISSB standards, and the conference tomorrow will appropriately focus on promoting high quality adoption and application of ISSB standards across borders, with a particular lens, of course, from across Asia, where we will be hearing from speakers on four themes. One, regulation, the state of play on regulations and the challenges and opportunities here in Asia. The use of information by investors, the way company reports, and also capacity building, including the role of multilateral development banks, global and regional. And since the board was last here, China has released its climate standard at the end of last year that provides the foundation to deliver functionally aligned outcomes to those resulting from the application of ISSB standards, which would characterize the Chinese approach as a full adoption of the standards. So I'm really looking forward to a great discussion tomorrow and Friday with our stakeholders that reflect the progress within China and here in Asia towards decision-useful sustainability-related disclosure. So I think that's it for us from us this month. Thank you all for listening. Before we go, just a reminder that we are consulting on enhancements to three SASB standards. So if you haven't yet looked through those proposals and shared your feedback, I would certainly encourage you to do so, please. And next month, we will be meeting in our Montreal office, so we look forward to speaking then. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Please contact us on communications@ifrs.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also sign up for email alerts on our website, ifres.org, or find us on social media.